With so many aspects of our lives now entwined with using technology in a digital world, supporting our children and young people to be digitally resilient is fundamental. Building digital resilience in our children and young people also depends on the resilience of our families and communities. This podcast aims to provide learners, families, education practitioners, professionals, and governors with the latest resources, information, and guidance to enhance their digital resilience.
Episode 3, Playing Video Games Online.
Online gaming has seen a massive increase in popularity. In 2020, according to Ofcom, around 7 in 10 children aged between 5 and 15 played games online. Many experts agree that playing online games can offer physical and social benefits to children and young people. These include strategic thinking, creativity, and problem-solving skills. However, as many aspects of their digital lives, there can be drawbacks. And with me today, like usual, is Gwion. You okay, Gwion?
Not bad, Howell. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks.
Good, good. So would you say that you're a bit of a gamer then, Howell?
No, I wouldn't class myself as a gamer, really. I've played a few games while I was younger. You know, FIFA being the main one, I'd say. Football Manager, probably. That was the one that really got me, I would say, borderline obsessed with playing it. But, No, at the moment, no, I'm not really. How about you?
Well, it started for me when I was, I think it was about, probably about 8 years old when I got my first console. It was the Nintendo Game Boy, not the colour one, the black and white one. I remember I used to drive my parents absolutely crazy because I used to steal the batteries from the remote control for the television. If you remember, it took 4 AA batteries. It was quite a lot, wasn't it? Yeah, but things have moved on quite swiftly since then. I'm thinking back to quite simple games such as Super Mario, Tetris. And obviously we've seen PlayStation 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 now, haven't we? So, yeah, things have been moving quite drastically. What about you, Hall?
Yeah, I wasn't a Nintendo user. I was more of a Sega. And I had the one before the Mega Drive. Probably the Mega Drive is the most popular one, really, the ones people possibly remember. There was one before that was called the Sega Master System, and you had, like the Mega Drive, you had cartridges to put in, so the game you put in, but this one had a built-in game, and that was big, you know. And the game was what's he called again? Alex the Kid. Do you remember that?
No, you're a bit older than me, Hall, so I don't remember it.
No, it was the game to play.
Was it?
Okay. Yeah.
Interesting. So what I'm going to do, Hall, I'm going to start you off with a quiz, as I usually do, to learn a bit more about some facts about gaming.
Yeah, here we go then.
You don't usually do very well in these quizzes, do you?
Well, no, put it this way, I'm not looking forward to it.
Okay. First question then, what would you say is the average age of a gamer?
Oh, I don't know. Where to start now? My confidence is so low. I would say it's quite young, so kind of children or young people tend to get phones, I would imagine, around about 10. So I'd say 14, something like that, start of the teenage years.
Okay, you're wrong, you're way off. The right answer is actually 35 years old.
Is it 35, is it?
Yeah, and I think it's based on the fact that video games, they cost so much to buy these days that you need an income to be able to afford it. And obviously, if you're 35, you've usually got an income coming in. So I saw a fact recently saying that over 30% of gamers are actually over 50 years old.
Are they?
Yeah, and it was based on playing such games as Sudoku, Crosswords, these type of thing. Do you remember Candy Crush, well?
Candy Crush, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
So all of these things are classed as online games, aren't they? So, when you think about it in that sense, 30% of gamers that are over 50 makes some sense, doesn't it? Yeah. Right then, second question. What is the most expensive game that's ever been made?
Well,
for a bonus point, how much did it cost?
Right, okay. Do I have to have the first question right first before I go with the bonus?
No, you can take a stab at both of them.
Okay then, so do you remember the game? It was quite popular back in the day, but I've never played it. I think it's a Microsoft game. Do you remember Halo?
I do remember Halo, yeah.
Halo had a lot of publicity around Halo, remember? And I'm gonna go with how much it cost, so let's go with something like 50 million.
Both answers are wrong.
Here you go.
Surprise, surprise. The answer to the first question was Grand Theft Auto 5.
Okay.
So that's the most expensive game that's ever been created. And it actually cost $137 million to create game. But the next figure, this is the most staggering one, it cost $128 million to actually market the game. So the marketing campaign built around it cost $128 million. So you're talking there well over $250 million on one game. But it generated $1 billion in 3 days after being released.
It was well worth it then, wasn't it? And the thing is, the thing with video games as well, you don't have to pay for the actors, do you?
No, so the campaign is all based around advertising and raising awareness. Yeah, so as you say, it's no actual fees for people having to do anything, is there?
No, exactly.
No. So those type of figures show me how sort of big the industry is. If you're talking there about £1 billion of revenue in just over 3 days, then it's quite a huge sort of industry, isn't it? So far, Joel, you've got 0 points out of a possible three. So the last question, this is your chance to redeem yourself now. We've all heard of Fortnite. What I haven't heard of, though, was the Fortnite World Cup. And I read into this to find out a bit more about it. And basically, it was people coming into arenas or stadiums to watch other people play Fortnite against other people. So it took me a while to get my head around that concept.
Yeah.
But the question is, what was the prize pot of the prize money that was available during the 2019 Fortnite World Cup?
Right, okay, did you say they made $3 billion in 1 day?
No, 1 billion in 3 days.
1 billion in 3 days, okay. So taking that into the equation, and I'm taking that it's the people that produced the video game or created the video game that are handing out these payouts. I'm going to say it's got to be quite big. I'd say £100,000.
Yeah, again, you're way off. The answer is actually $30 million.
Million?
$30 million. Again, that shows the extent of things, isn't it? So the winner didn't get $30 million. But that was the prize money available for the whole tournament. So, for example, if you got into the quarterfinals, you would have received a nice payout there as well, which makes me think that we might be approaching video gaming in the wrong way, possibly. You wouldn't tell a child off for practicing the piano for 4 hours a day, but you might raise the question then if they were playing Fortnite for 4 hours a day. So, but Fortnite has got the opportunity there, similar to other online games such as FIFA is another one that again people will pay you to play FIFA professionally. There's a chance that you can build a fortune, isn't it, from playing games.
You can build, you'd imagine, more than if you were playing piano, wouldn't you?
Yeah So you can build a career out of playing these type of video games. So again, I've been doing some reading on the internet and in some magazines and so on, and what I found was the next big sort of gaming, the next big part of the gaming industry is going to be based around virtual reality. We've all seen these type of headsets that you wear and you've got some paddles in your hands to be able to sort of do the movements and so on. And that's the part, it seems now, of the gaming industry is going to be exploited in the near future. And obviously there's some health benefits linked to that, isn't there, when you think about, for example, rather than playing a game of golf using a handset, you now do the movement, so you've got some sensors on your paddles or whatever you're going to use with your VR setup. You've got some sensors to be able to do the movement, so you actually use your golf swing in a proper sense rather than in a gaming sense. So, which leads me on to the next section, really, Joel. So we're going to have a discussion around the pros and cons of gaming.
Yeah.
And obviously, I've just noted the one there is there's going to be physical benefits of gaming in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
When you think about, I saw something recently about a boxing game.
Oh,
you actually had to move around the room and do the boxing movement. So there were some physical benefits there. Obviously, your heartbeat was increased, and there were some physical aspects of playing that game. But one of the other benefits is, obviously, I think you mentioned this previously, was the ability to think strategically. So a lot of games are based around problem solving. Mm-hmm. You have to solve the problem in order to be able to move on to the next level. So it's got to be a strength, isn't it? So it develops your ability to think in a different way, to be able to solve that problem. Can you think of any other benefits at all?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the problem solving there. You could solve a problem as part of a team. Now with the the multi-game aspects of games, now you could be working on one puzzle or one. It could even be a game of football where you need someone else to help you win the game or complete something. And something else that I've seen that could be a benefit, or could you could develop your skills here, is multitasking. So, for example, I saw on what's it called, Minecraft, that you can now create a code to be building a house, say on Minecraft, and then that would happen in the background. Once you've created the code or the program, it runs itself and it'll build a house, and then you could be doing something else. So that's an example of where it could develop multitasking skills there.
Good. I've had something recently on a website. It's called Scientific American. I think there's a magazine called Scientific American. Do you remember the game Tetris?
I do. Yeah, I remember Tetris. Yeah. Well, it was one of the ones that got you hooked, really, wasn't it? It's a bit like Snake on your phone.
Exactly. So for the listeners who maybe don't remember Tetris, there used to be shapes falling from the top of the screen, and you had to sort of readjust the alignment of the shape and make it sort of stack tidily across the bottom.
A bit like a jigsaw, really, wasn't it?
It was a jigsaw, but you had to think quickly, and you had to think where you were going to move that piece. You could move it left and right, but you couldn't move it back up. So it constantly fell. Wherever it landed, it stayed there. And it was quite a simple concept, really, but as you said, it was quite addictive. But this magazine has pointed out a piece of research recently that showed that game could help people suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, so PTSD, and it was about the spatial and the visual aspects of that game. It could help with the visioning involved with flashbacks, so it could help people process the information from flashbacks in a better way. And again, so that's obviously a big benefit there that's linked to playing the game, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and another thing I want to point out as well is, obviously, you've got games such as Sudoku, Crosswords, these type of games where you complete a puzzle, and it's been shown that these type of games, they can sort of almost reverse the decline of people's mind. So as you get older, obviously, your mind isn't as sharp as it once was, but by playing these type of games for a set amount of time per week or per day, it'll help you keep your mind working sharply.
Yeah. I suppose it improves concentration as well, doesn't it?
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, you focus on something for a period of time.
Mm.
It does. There's also big financial implications linked to gaming as well. So we mentioned the Fortnite World Cup previously. A big industry now seems to be growing is esports.
Yeah, I've heard of it, yeah.
And apparently esports might be part of the next Olympic Games.
Yeah, I think that's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah, I think esports is basically, if you haven't heard about it, similar to the Fortnite World Cup, people are paid professionally then to take part in competitions representing a certain team on a certain game. So, for example, Manchester City could employ me as their main FIFA player. So I represent Manchester City playing a video game against other representatives from other clubs. And again, there's a huge pot of money to be won in these tournaments. So there are financial implications and benefits that could be linked to these type of games. But obviously, there's the negative aspects as well. And this is what we're going to discuss next now then. Oh, it's all good and well if somebody is able to make their fortune playing a video game. The reality is most people won't. And the risk involved with spending a lot of time playing games is obviously the sense of being addicted to a game. And the WHO, the World Health Organization, back in 2018, they've actually identified gaming disorder as a disease. And it's been part of the international classification of diseases since 2018. You can even get treatment on the NHS now for this disorder. So that's quite alarming, isn't it? Well,
it is, and I mentioned it before, and I can see how easy it is to become addicted to games as well, because that's what they're built for, really. They try to get you to play as much as you can, really. And this was going back to my secondary school days. You're going back 20 years now, Guion. But I became a little bit obsessed with playing Football Manager, and I was waking up early, setting the alarm to be able to play those extra two games the morning before going to the school. So I can see how easy it is, and it's good to know that there is something out there now that can help with this disorder.
Yeah, and the way that the games have been designed, they suck you into the game, don't they?
They do, so yeah.
They call it persuasive design, so obviously it's all colourful, it's all engaging. Levels now within a game could take anywhere between half an hour and an hour and a half sometimes to complete, whereas Think back to the games that we used to play when we were children. You played the level of Super Mario, it'd be over within a minute, wouldn't it, usually?
Yeah.
So the way that things are designed, they're designed obviously to keep you in the game. And the idea of open worlds within a game, so rather than following a level, you're able to travel across the open world in your car, on the back of your horse, whatever it means. So the game actually never ends, does it? Well,
No. Yeah, lots of downsides. We've spoken about the positives, haven't we, or the benefits that you could get from gaming. But yeah, there are a number of
negatives.
Negatives, that's the word. There are a number of negatives we need to consider as well. And I mentioned it before with the Sudoku game, keeping your mind sharp. And I also said that it improves concentration. But I suppose it's going to be harder to concentrate on things such as lessons in school, because you're half expecting that, that light to light up somewhere saying, oh, well done for completing a paragraph. Here's extra points towards your account, kind of thing. Kind of having incentives in games keeps you going and keeps you or makes you able to concentrate, because you know nothing stays the same for a long period of time with games. It's constantly changing, isn't it?
Yeah, because you're playing within that engaging environment. Suddenly, when you come out of that engaging environment, nothing else seems as engaging then.
Yeah, no, yeah. I remember you saying before, concentration span of a human now is less than of a goldfish, apparently, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what one piece of research tells us. Quite alarming. So let's think back to this idea of being addicted to playing games then. So obviously you've got mental, physical and emotional knock-on effects linked to that, haven't you? First one being lack of sleep. So again, back to this persuasive design, game sucks you in. You find it really hard then to put that game to bed for you to go to sleep then. Some people might find themselves, this can be children, young children, young adults, anybody really can find it hard to put that game down. It could be 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when you realise, God, it's late, I've got to stop this now. And then obviously you lose a lot of sleep because of that.
Mm.
That could lead on to all sorts of health problems, couldn't it? And the fact that you're sitting down playing a game could lead on to obesity, just bad health in general. And is that getting that balance between the time you spend using a screen or playing the game, between balancing between that and real life, isn't it? And that's what some people find it hard to do.
Yeah, and these games, they've changed a lot over the years, and they go on. I remember when we had our Master Systems and your Nintendo, our parents chose the game that we were able to play. They got into remember the shop called Game?
Yeah.
Yeah, they probably went into Game, looked at the instructions and the age rating of a game, and then decided, yeah, that's fine for Hoella, that's fine for Gwion, and then they're able to play that. Now, everything's online, so the children, in a way, can choose themselves what they buy and what they play. It's got the filter, in a way, is gone away, isn't it? So the parents' filter is gone. It's kind of the same when you go on the game now. For example, if you go on FIFA, you're able to speak or chat with someone, anyone in the world. Whereas before, if you had someone to come over to play, they'd knock on your door, your mum or your dad would answer the door, and that was a filter. You knew who that child was. Yeah, come in and play. We haven't got that now, have we?
No. So it's as you said, it's changed a lot, and you can play and speak to literally anybody, any random person from across the world.
Yeah.
And if you were cross, if I beat you on FIFA, as I probably would have a couple of years ago, if I beat you, you would have been sort of disappointed, but you'd get on with it. But whereas now, if I beat you and you're playing from a different country, for example, you might get really cross and send me a nasty message and send me some online hate material, possibly.
Yeah, and children and young people now they're more open to stuff like online bullying, like you just said there, and hate. And another thing that's come into the equation now is radicalization. You know, like you've just said, you don't know who's on the other side of the computer game or who you're chatting to. So it's really opened things up. And like I said before, the filter from your parents is not there anymore. So they've got to keep an eye, a close eye on that, haven't they?
Definitely. And when you play games such as Fortnite, for example, you're playing with a lot of other people. So you're essentially part of that community. And when you're part of a community, you might not always feel comfortable as part of that community, but you'll always feel the need to fit in. In some instances, and to fit in you might have to say something quite radical, and obviously you open yourself up, you said that already, to stuff like radicalization, because you're trying to fit into that particular community that you found yourself in online whilst playing the game. So just to finish off the section now on the negative aspects of gaming, the last one for me is the social pressures. So when you play games, it could be a non-violent game such as FIFA, where you play football, for example. Somebody from down the road, they've got a team, and they've got Lionel Messi as part of their team. He's the best player on the game. I haven't got any good players. But one of my other friends, he's got Cristiano Ronaldo, another one of the top players of the game. But again, I haven't got anybody. So I can actually buy the opportunity to get better players, and I can use my actual money to buy what we call loot boxes. And what a loot box is the ability to buy a box that's full of random stuff with the slightest opportunity that box can include a good player. It happens in a lot of games. For example, in Fortnite, I can buy a box. That mystery box might have a better gun for me, probably won't. It might have a better outfit for my player, probably won't. But there's always that slight opportunity for me to get something better, for me to catch up with my friends who might have better stuff in that gaming environment compared to me. So what the experts are really concerned about now is, obviously this is imposing a sort of gambling type behavior from a very young age, and they don't know yet what the effect that is going to have in their later lives for children and young people. They're able to gamble what they have, gamble their money for that opportunity to win something big. It's the exact same concept as going up to a fruit machine in a casino, pulling that lever with the opportunity of winning that jackpot. Most probably you won't get anything back, but there's always that opportunity. And it's that gambling type of behaviour that people are concerned about. I remember playing a game, it was a game of pool, and I had that on my phone. So if I had to sit in a waiting room in the dentist waiting to go in, or if I had to wait for a train or something, I used to get this game out and I played a couple of rounds of pool with, again, random people I didn't know. But the game suddenly started to offer me to buy some stuff. For example, I could buy a new pool cue that would give me more power that might have cost £1.99. I could buy a new hat for my player, which would give him extra spin on the ball. It's these type of things. And that came into a game of pool, which made me think, hang on, this is a bit weird, because I'm just trying to have a game of pool, but you're trying to sell me some stuff. I then started to play Sudoku, and the Sudoku game offered me to buy some extra cheats or tips whenever I got stuck doing the puzzle. I can use one of these sort of cheats or tips and to find the hidden answer. And they offered me to buy 5 of them. I could buy 10, I could buy 15. And obviously, the more I bought, the cheaper the unit price came. So again, it's about buying to catch up, isn't it? And
yeah. Well, you know what? That's reminded me now of something. Well, the latest game I bought home here. And it's a mixture of real life and game. So you might have heard of it. It's called Swift. It's a biking game. So what it is, you have to buy a machine which is kind of like a rolling road. Cars go on rolling roads to measure how fast they can go. So basically, you put the back wheel on this rolling road, and then it detects how fast you pedal. And then it speaks to an online game, which will then take you around this course on the game. And then you're competing against other people. So you could be cycling for half an hour or an hour, and then at the end, it'll tell you what position you came in the ride. But what it's also got, it's the more you ride or the more you cycle, the more sweat points you get, and you can use these sweat points. You can look at this like on the other side of the argument. So with your examples, you had to pay to get something better, but on this one, you had to work harder and sweat to get sweat points so you could buy a better bike on the game, or buy a better helmet which is more aerodynamic, and that would affect how fast you'd go on the game then. So you could look at it that way, but again, it's the same social pressure in a way, isn't it? We have
Is that pressure to be better and catch up with a sort of the better group within that game? But that's a very positive example, though, because it uses that initiative for particular health benefits, isn't it?
It does, yeah.
Good. So we're going to finish today, as we always do, by offering you some top tips on how to keep your children or learners safe when playing games. So over to Howell for tip number one.
Tip number one, staying safe around other gamers. Gaming is an activity in which children and young people can add other players to their contact list or come into contact with a large number of strangers through massive multiplayer online games such as Fortnite, Roblox, and Apex Legends. Remind your child that it can be fine to chat with and play alongside these players, but that they should be very careful not to give out any personal information.
Tip number two, setting clear time limits for playing. It can be easy for children and young people to spend a lot of their time on their favourite games. Some take hundreds of hours to explore or complete. However, it's important to agree on a sensible length of time for gaming sessions and to encourage a child to take regular breaks.
Tip number three, talk to them. Showing an interest in what sort of games your child enjoys will encourage them to talk to you, as will playing the game with them. This will also give you insight into how and why they play different types of games and the gaming content that they're seeing regularly.
Tip number four, restrict in-game purchasing. Get to know the settings on your child's console or device to restrict purchase of in-game items. You can usually lock these options with a PIN or a password, giving you much greater control over what can be bought.
The next tip is check for age ratings. All console video games and PC games and all apps on Microsoft Store, Google Play and the App Store will have a recommended age rating from Pan-European Game Information, or PEGI, as well as information on themes the game portrays.
And the last tip is to equip them with strategies. Show your child how to block and report abusive players, as well as other things they can do if they're not enjoying the game. For example, don't retaliate. Instead, turn off or mute the conversation. Encourage them to show respect for other gamers and speak to you or a trusted adult if they see or hear anything worrying or upsetting. And that's it from us today. Another episode gone, Howell.
Thank you very much for your company, Gwion. Enjoyed it.
As always, yeah, thank you very much. So remember now to take a look at the Online Safety Zone on Hub, where you'll find plenty of resources to support what we've discussed with you today and a lot of other things as well. Howell, you've got one thing to share with everybody?
Yep, just a quick reminder that Safer Internet Day is coming up on February the 8th this year.
There you go, so plenty of resources on the Hub website again to support that. So make sure you've got some activities lined up for your school to support with Safer Internet Day. If you haven't done so already, click the like, click the share button, click the subscribe button, and we'll see you all soon. So stay safe, everyone, and thank you very much.